With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap with your Radio City Talk. Neil Atkinson, Paul Cope, Rob Gutman and Melissa Reddy. To go through, well, we're telling you a series of stories. The first story is going to be that a week is a long time in football, and we're going to work through that between now and about 15 minutes or so. And then we're going to shoot over to Rob and John, who are going to give you a transfer update, which is very good of them indeed. And then we'll be back looking forward to Liverpool versus Manchester City, almost in the sense of it being like a test match, this burgeoning rivalry, which may or may not be there. All of that is to come, but we will start with a week being a long, long, long time in football. I'll go to you first on this, Paul Cope. We beat Everton. Since we last were on the radio, we beat Everton. Virgil van Dijk signed for Liverpool. Philip Coutinho, Virgil van Dijk scored the winner in that regard. Philip Coutinho left Liverpool. And since then, everything's gone into overdrive. And in terms of pure events, I think theoretically football maybe still moves at the same speed it always did, in that games are still games, transfers, players have always moved clubs. Mm-hmm. But it does seem oddly quicker. Maybe it's partially the spacing of the games, that there's never a day without football. We've had 12 consecutive days with games involving top flight sides, which ended on Thursday. It means there's always something. There's always about to be a press conference between Mourinho and Conte where they're slaughtering each other. Yeah. We're not more than seconds away from another Liverpool link. I mean, I'm sure Rob loves this and we'll come on to that, but it does sort of, it's endless, isn't it, at the minute? And it is, like, a week, you feel as if you list the events, you're like, we haven't got through all that in 1 week.
Yeah, it's endless by design though as well, isn't it? That's the whole point of this enterprise now. The whole point of 24-hour news and social media and Sky Sport and all the rest of it. It's literally been developed this way over the past few years. So it's no surprise and no coincidence. It's funny,
right, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it depends how, it's like everything in life, isn't it? It just depends how you look at it. Like even you mentioning the point there, Joe, we beat Everton, we signed Van Dijk, and then Coutinho leaves. And it depending on the type of personality you are, that's either two massive highs and then now you're in a crushing depression and you're really low, or you just take it all in your stride and you say, it's still fantastic we battered Everton, and it's still brilliant we've got this colossus Dutch defender that's strolling around the place looking like Milt Treyman. And the fact that Phil Coutinho's gone, so what? Like, it wasn't that big a surprise. We might, in a week's time, we might have Naby Keita in and then we'll all be happy again. So
I feel people can't say in the one breath, it's actually about the football. We've forgotten we actually won a football match and sort of sneer at the transfers. Whereas one of the great things about that football matching is, it was obviously it's beating Everton, but the manner in which we did it was because a saviour was signed and a saviour was there at the denouement. Absolutely. To make that happen. Yeah. So the two things are inextricably and always linked.
But it's not just even the matches versus the transfers. This is my point, Rob. It's more the fact that there's just always a match, whether or not
Liverpool.
It's the fact that, you know, there's we've just got off the back of the League Cup first leg semi-finals where Bristol took Man City to the wire, and I'm paying attention to that even if I'm not even properly watching it.
Yeah.
Because we're playing Man City next, and then it's Arsenal-Chelsea, and I want to know what's going to happen in Arsenal-Chelsea, because that's got a knock-on effect to our top four dreams. And Arsenal got knocked out of the FA Cup by Nottingham Forest, and I was all over that. And when I was actually during the Nottingham Forest Arsenal game, I was thinking, hang on, when do you actually get a bit of a break from this? I honestly felt like I swam in FA Cup. I drowned in FA Cup. I had FA Cup coming at my ears. It probably wouldn't have helped that way if we'd have got beat by Everton. But the very fact that we don't, suddenly I'm all over every aspect of all of those games. What's going to happen next?
And Carabao Cup. I know, I've watched all those games you've mentioned. I think we're all watching a lot of football at the moment. And you know what that's a sign of? That we're happy. despite Philip Coutinho's attempts to make us unhappy, we're broadly happy. And that's what that's a signifier of.
I think managers say that nothing in football happens fast enough. You know, you can be watching a match, and if there's not a goal in the first 10 minutes, it's suddenly, there's no goals being scored. It's been a dull opening 10 minutes. You know, a sacking can't happen quick enough when there's a poor run of form. Transfers, as soon as you sell a player, like immediately after the Felipe Coutinho departure, it was, right, who are Liverpool signing? And then it becomes like an every 5 minute thing. What's the update? What's the update? Who are they in for? And it becomes almost like a cycle of obsession with every, because you have the match to tie you over. When the match is not there, you return your thoughts to the transfer. When that transfer is done, you're then not happy. Okay, we've got Virgil van Dijk, and who's next? Okay, we've sold Felipe Coutinho, but what now? There's always something else. And that something else can never, ever, ever happen quick enough. And I think that's just the nature of modern football as it is.
Do you know what would be fantastic is in the future, if football really accepts its show, that it is show business's potential, that eventually it becomes reality show time, like Big Brother. And we get cameras on Klopp, on Michael Edwards, on the transfer people, everything in training, we get to see what they're doing and thinking all the time, like the Truman Show.
There was a great suggestion that basically the transfer window should be 3 days. And every club should have a representative in a hotel.
Yes,
and every room
idea.
Should be wired up and mic'd up and camered up. And there's just 3 days and everyone's got to get it sorted out. And that's it.
I don't think we're that far away from that, you know. Yeah. Like, remember there was footage of Sheffield United from behind the scenes in the summer, which was, I thought, was horrendous. I've got a mate who's a big Sheffield United fan. Playing pool most of the day. And then complaining about a lad sitting at Sheffield train station who they couldn't possibly do any more to sign. And I'm saying to my mate, they could have just gone to Sheffield train station, couldn't they, instead of playing that like, extra game of pool.
Well, that Coutinho piece in the Daily Mail felt to me like it was like an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It was so odd. It was like it was reality TV, and it felt so, in a way, disrespectful because, you know, here's a player who's still contracted to a club, waiting for news on what could potentially happen, but, you know, posing for pictures like everything's already decided. I think heads would fall off more than they currently are if this reality TV idea does go ahead.
The Coutinho Daily Mail puff piece was just that. It was just, oh, and Philippe's a lovely lad after all. But the very fact that in its existence, it undermines the purpose of the piece by thinking we need to do a piece that says that Philippe's all right. Don't hate him for leaving Liverpool. What we'll do is we'll document all the time up until he just leaves Liverpool because that'll be sound. It makes me go, well, hang on, that's absolutely wild. In the act of conceiving of this and enacting it, its very purpose is complete. It does the opposite job, and that's what that puff piece was.
I thought it was really unusual, and until I was coming in today and we were going to talk about it, I've not really thought about it at all. But when I stop and think about it, it's incredible. I actually can't believe, for once, I'm usually quite critical of the way people react on the internet, but I can't believe there hasn't been complete uproar about it. And I think he does get away with loads still, even though he's gone, because he comes across as a quiet, shy little lad. And I think we
with a nice smile and a nice head of hair.
I think we see him as a little boy still, even the way we talk about him, the little magician, and he's this little lad with that haircut.
You've actually never heard his voice, really.
Yeah, but I think that's part of it as well. He's very shy and
speaks like a Jerry out of Tom and Jerry or Michael Jackson. Yeah.
The voice of a choir of unicorns, this lad.
This is actually one of the most disrespectful things I've ever seen done. If Van Dijk was doing this about leaving Southampton, they'd be going absolutely insane about it.
Yeah, my heart sank when I saw that piece because I've got to be honest, it's sometimes disheartening when a player can be actually genuinely a nice person and do for so long everything right, but they will always be judged by that final thing they do in the way they exit. And this is the case with him again, you know. And I know people's perceptions of him have changed because he forcibly wanted to leave Liverpool, but in 5 years that he's been here, him and his wife have like really taken the city and the people and everything. They've socialized. They've been genuinely, his wife used to go to every home and away game, like a proper Liverpool supporter. And even when he wasn't playing, she'd go and, you know, support Lucas and everyone else. And they're genuinely nice people, down to earth. But that decision to do that piece, and this herein lies with the agent, because he's known to have a relationship with the Daily Mail. And it's his decision, you know, to document this. And it's obviously a cause of interest because it's a transfer, a massive transfer at that. It makes him look better as well, because here's this man who, you know, Liverpool didn't want to sell Coutinho to Barcelona in January, but he's the negotiator that made this all happen. It's a way to humanize Coutinho, to show him with his, you know, with his family, his mom, his daughter, his wife, which... that's not needed, because he doesn't need that. He is actually nice. And if without that, piece, if his Instagram post, you know, of his letter saying goodbye, if that goes up without the piece, people look at it differently. The fact that his actual goodbye now
yep.
is that interview, is that piece in the Daily Mail, is so great. I swear when I saw it, I thought, what are you doing? What have you done? It could have been different because he deserved to leave after 5 years of service, after not having won anything. Mm-hmm. And he had the opportunity. PSG came in for him before he signed his new contract. They came in for him after he signed his new contract. They spoke to his camp. And he batted away all those advances. And it was only Barcelona who could turn his head. I was told that Real Madrid were trying as well. But it was only Barcelona that he was going to leave for. And, you know, when your family and everyone have sacrificed so much to move with you, when you were a teenager, to go to Italy with you, you owe them, you know, this move for their own lifestyle. So people, I think, would have been more forgiving without that piece.
It is. It was an astonishing thing. I think in general, there's no point where this ceases with South American players, Rob. They will have one of Real Madrid or Barcelona they want to move to, possibly both in some cases. In some cases, it will just be one. This is where Sanchez is an interesting comparison point, in that at the minute, well, Sanchez has had a go at that. That's why he's not going back there. He's had that move, and now he's sort of, you know,
the sheen was taken off it for him. I mean, they bought him, used him, and made him a bit part player, and then dispensed with him when they'd had enough. So it's not the golden horizon for him anymore. Whereas I think for a lot of Latin American boys, they grow up. Europe is the holy grail for their careers, and those two teams are the pinnacle. There's obviously the correlation to Latin football, but as well, they have been the dominant forces in European football now for 10
and the greatest footballer of all time, and the greatest South American footballer of all time plays for Barcelona. If you want to have an argument about Diego Maradona, well, he played for Barcelona as well. If you want to have an argument, you know, Di Stefano played for both of them, part Argentinian, part Spanish.
And Cristiano's, it's all there for them. You can't for a second begrudge, I don't care what nationality they are, the idea of Barcelona. Barcelona are the iconic force in world football alongside Real Madrid. And those two still stand ahead of the rest, even though Man United would like to think they're
well,
there.
Well, and us as well. I mean, you know, we are as romantic as any other football club going, but we've got other things to sort out. And also we've got the pressures at the minute of six sides going into four in terms of Champions League finishes, putting back-to-back league titles together. But this is where, you know, on all of this, Paul, it then becomes a matter of focus. And that's the next interesting thing when we're talking about recruitment, which will be happening a little bit after the break. You know, it seems to me there's some significant elimination you can do when you're trying to scout a player for Jurgen Klopp, because his parameters become very narrow in terms of what he wants on and off the pitch very, very quickly. But he's very much hanging on to his own essence in the fact that he doesn't really want to be part of this week being a long time, this circus. He's dragged them all off to Dubai. He's got everyone out the way. It's focusing on what actually matters. Well, it's the thing on the green space, and we'll sort everything else out later. And he's concentrating his essence on that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting things that's happening. It's one of the most interesting things to watch everybody else react to it, Liverpool fans especially. Because it's, as Mel's saying about things, everyone wants something now and something changing every second. There's something new reported every couple of minutes. That's just not how Jurgen Klopp's going to do business. And as I was on the way in, I was thinking about this. Something you learn as a lawyer as you're looking at reviewing contracts and things is it's really easy to comment on the things that are right in front of you. The most difficult thing to do in anything is to comment on things that aren't there. What isn't there that should be, or what's not happening that's interesting? And I was thinking about Pep Guardiola, and isn't it interesting? All of a sudden, no one's asking Pep Guardiola where his plan B is. And I remember vividly last year when he got asked in a press conference, where's your plan B, Pep? Where's your plan B? And he said, my plan A has won me 27 trophies in 10 years, or whatever it was. I think I'll stick to that. And 6 months later, or wherever we are now, a year down the line, look at what's happened by him sticking to that.
Lovely segue in from Paul Cope. In a minute, Rob Gutman's going to be talking to John Gibbons about transfers. After 7 o'clock, we're going to be talking about Klopp, Guardiola, what it is to be a manager in this era, what it is to be intransigent, and the beginnings of a rivalry. This is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. Do not accept any pale imitations.
Now it is John Gibbons with Rob Gutman, and we're going to talk transfers and breaking news, if there kind of is any. The idea was that Neil had to record this segment quite early, and he was worried sick, Rob, that something would break in the Naby Keita story in particular, and he wanted us to be able to dive in and do a summary of what's gone on, but not huge amounts today at least.
Yeah, it's a story that's ticking over, isn't it, really, rather than sort of coming to a head. It's keeping me up nights. Look, there's no doubt since Coutinho left that there's been a sense of urgency, I think, amongst all of us who aren't in the know and aren't on the inside of the club to see Liverpool replace Coutinho. And when news broke a day or so ago, a couple of days ago, it began to emerge that there was a real chance that Naby Keita could be brought to Liverpool early. And we've all been hyped up to the eyeballs last summer about just how good Naby Keita is. And we were all a bit gutted that he didn't sign. And then the end of the window, we find out we've got him next season. So to get him early would be a tremendous thing. The news that was coming out of Germany, built kicker magazines, I think, were saying, Leipzig ready to do business now after being a bit of intransigent before. Leipzig in the last 24 hours, that their manager at a press conference very much denied, almost, you could read it as tried to put everything to bed with his comments. I'm not quite sure he did. I think
no.
I thought it was more one of those things that managers say. I'm quietly optimistic.
Yeah, he was interesting, Jürgen Klopp, today as well in his press conference on transfers. And we do a show called Team Talk on Tour Player, which is our subscription service, which goes in depth on the press conference and looking forward to the game forward. So I don't want to touch on the stuff he did around the game because that's all in that. But on transfers generally, he plays his cards fairly close to his chest on that subject on transfers, but he's also not afraid to rule things out if they're not happening. So if he categorically, for example, isn't going for a goalkeeper, then he'll say, no, we're happy with what we've got. He didn't do that with attacking players, did he? Which makes me suggest that if they can get something done, they will.
Yeah, I very much remember last January, the media linked us to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and he came out and said, I don't normally comment on rumours, but I can say that one is absolute nonsense. 6 months later, he's a Liverpool player. The manager does play his cards close to his chest. I think he does try to divert attention. His main priority when talking to the media about transfers seems to be to not give them any in suggesting that he's not happy with his current squad. That's his default as a manager. It's what I think makes him an excellent man manager, is he will be seen to be backing them at all times, certainly in public. And that's why I think he doesn't want to go forward and go, yeah, we need a replacement. Because the implication is that we're lacking confidence without one. It was interesting when he was asked specifically about Keita. His comments were very much reminded me of Barcelona manager's comments about a week ago when asked about Coutinho. It was that sort of default. He's the player of another club, and I don't. It wouldn't be right for me to comment. What he didn't do, and maybe I'm clutching at some sort of straw here, is categorically say that can't happen this window. Out of respect to Leipzig, we have to say now it can't happen. He didn't knock it out. In fact, his other comments around transfers were, it's a long month still. Let's talk about this on the 31st of January. Let's see what can happen. I thought he was very much giving the impression that Liverpool were keen to do business. I think if he thought they were unlikely to, and he has in the past, he would have made more emphasis about just how happy he was with his squad, and he would have talked about the options in his squad in more detail. I thought that if you want to be a transfer optimist, I thought he provided very, very subtly some reasons to be optimistic.
On outs as well, I thought he was quite interested on Daniel Sturridge in that he very much left the door open there as well. He was perhaps even more so. I was asked directly about him, and it was a kind of, well, we'll see what happens. Doesn't sound too good for Daniel, does it, in terms of his Liverpool career anyway?
Yeah, I mean, Dan, the writing's been on the wall with Daniel's Liverpool career, I think, for a while. He fought his way back into contention. I think he had a good pre-season and impressed Klopp. But inevitably, his chances were going to be limited. We had the Fab Four, which is now the Fab Three, but they were keeping Daniel out the side. When there was opportunity to deputise for Roberto Firmino, who really has that striker spot nailed down, Klopp was keen to share it between Solanke and Sturridge. I think just as there was becoming to be more opportunity with the games coming so thick and fast in November, December, we're playing two games a week. Solanke saw quite a bit of action.
Yeah.
Sturridge might have seen, but Sturridge was unfortunate to be ill and then injured. He's now back in training. You never say never with Daniel. I mean, he's back and fit and may be ready to fire. Let's see what happens. Of course, it's a World Cup year. If Sturridge can see himself getting regular game time at a reasonable level elsewhere and that he can force his way back into the England squad, he's coming towards his 29th birthday. It's his last World Cup, I would have thought. It'd be quite a swan song for him to get back into the England squad. And I think that'd be his priority. And I'm sure Klopp respects that.
One to watch there as well. A few lads have got out on loan as well today. Ryan Kent's only been back in the country for 24 hours and he's off to Bristol City, which feels a really good move for him. And also Cameron Brannigan has left the club permanently this week. He's gone to Oxford, which I think is quite a good move for him as well. Everything I know about Oxford suggests they play good football and play it on the deck. And I think that'll suit Cameron Brannigan, who maybe...
Great pubs. It won't affect Cameron because he's a model pro, but definitely.
Well, maybe we can all go and see him.
Yeah, we can.
So, Rob, you host the Gutter Show on our Tour Play subscription service, which is all about transfers. It's hot and heavy, especially in a transfer window. If you were a betting man, which I know you are, but you tend to bet on the worst case scenario.
Transfer worst case scenario. I genuinely do that.
So you bet on Lamar going to Arsenal.
I haven't done that yet. I bet against Van Dijk joining and actually cleaned up.
Because, of course, he didn't.
Because he didn't join. Yeah. I actually, right at the beginning of this window, I bet against Van Dijk joining and he did join. Happy to lose the money. So go on, Lamar.
So say I wasn't going to talk about Lamar anyway, but say you were a betting man, but you bet on good things instead of bad things.
Yes, okay.
Are you, in terms of ins between now and then, would you say 1, 2... more or zero?
I think I like the expression, if you had to bet your mortgage on it. so you have to get off the fence. I do think Naby Keita will come in.
You do?
Yes, I do. I do. I don't think it's a cert by any means, but I think it's the right side of above 50% chance that he does. In terms of somebody else, I also think it's the right side of above 50% that somebody else comes in, and I expect them to be somewhere an attacking player with a replacement of Coutinho in mind. I mean, if we're to read the rumours, the ideal player is Lamar. But if they fail to get him, would they almost settle for a Riyad Mahrez? I don't know, but I think somebody will come. But to answer the question specifically, let's call it two, including Naby Keita.
Two, including Naby Keita. So exciting times to come. So do make sure you subscribe to the Anfield Wrap if you don't. If you do, then we're grateful. And I'm sure you're enjoying it. And do tell your friends. If you don't, it's £5 a month to subscribe. Minimum sign-up is 1 month. So if you don't like it, you can cancel straight away and you only really lost the price of a pint. But most people tend to stay because they enjoy it. They enjoy the transfer stuff that Rob is really good at. But also everything we do around matches. And there's a huge match against Manchester City on Sunday. And we'll be doing lots and lots of build up to that and already started that. And then straight after the game, we'll be doing post-match reaction shows. We'll be doing more in-depth reviews, more in-depth statistical analysis and things like that from qualified coaches. So lots and lots for you to enjoy and to hopefully celebrate a Liverpool win. Did you do the City Talks show, Rob?
This one?
Yeah. Nice, you've done it. Did you? Was it good?
Yeah.
Have people got plenty to look forward to?
Yeah, loads to look forward to. Won't they be hearing this in the middle?
They will, yeah.
So you can enjoy me and think about this. We're breaking fourth walls or something.
Well, I've
some sort of wall.
I've been heard of, yeah. Did you tip a win?
Do you know what? For once, I didn't. I said 1-1.
Yeah. I think it feels like a score Geordie game to me, to be honest with you, this one.
I suppose I just don't want to imagine how good life will feel if we actually do.
Well, how long are you out for on Sunday?
Yeah, exactly. It's.
I've got to go and catch a plane. I'm going to Egypt on holiday. Yeah. So basically, I can't drink because I've got to drive to Birmingham. Well, one of these very early flights. I can't remember the last time I didn't get a flight between 7 and 9 a.m. I have heard other flights exist, but I haven't got one.
I know. My kids actually got to the point where they like that. They like being woken up in the middle of the night. They think it's more exciting. I'm down with that. I don't like catching a flight at 3 in the afternoon. You're wasting the day till then.
I suppose, yeah, but I don't know. So I've got to drive down to Birmingham because that's where we fly from to stay in one of these airport hotels and go. So I don't know. It would feel like a shame to leave the city if we win it. But I'm sure you guys, you know, the collective Liverpool people will do a great job painting it red.
You see, that's my psychology. It'll be a shame to leave, but you want that shame to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I always want the shame,
Rob. You're betting against us in a way.
Better us against in a way. Oh, listen here. Thanks to Rob for joining us for this little transfer update of sorts. And now I presume there's going to be some adverts and then Neil Atkinson will be back.
Neil Atkinson back. This is the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. Listen, Liverpool is just settling in. Liverpool play on Sunday, Friday evening, as you're listening to this, I suspect. Liverpool play on Sunday, and it feels like, in a strange way, a little bit of a test match, which most football matches don't. I want to expand that point, but first and foremost, Mel, it feels like we're on the cusp of a rivalry in a strange sense. There's something in my mind about Liverpool and Chelsea of 13 years ago, feeling like you sort of matched up against a side. That happened in 04 with Mourinho and Benitez both going at the same time. And like that one, this one feels a little bit like we've got the pedigree, you've got the money. But unlike 13 years ago, I think we've also got the players that Liverpool can. You know, you can do a joint Liverpool City 11 and it isn't laughable to have six of theirs and five of ours in there. It isn't ridiculous to reach that sort of point. We can at least feel as though we can, you know, we're in the conversation with them over these footballers.
Yeah, it's intriguing as well, because a lot of people on the Manchester patch, for me, this is the best Premier League fixture going, Liverpool against Manchester City.
Completely agree.
Two sides that are not looking to nullify, two sides that genuinely want to be aggressive, want to take the initiative, two very established, esteemed managers that stick to their principles. And people on the Manchester patch as well have said, you know, this is the fixture they circle on the calendar as well for those reasons. And I thought Pep Guardiola, the way he speaks about Liverpool, and, you know, he referenced that Jurgen Klopp is one of the best managers of the world at creating an attacking side that's so varied and that can hit you in an instant in so many different ways. And when City won earlier in the season, that 5-0, he came out and he admitted afterwards, 11v11, it's a different game. Mm. Everything changes once Sadio Mane goes off. And I think that was, you know, a turning point in City season. That game just galvanized them and I think set them up for the run that they're on. And Liverpool will look at that moment as well, because, you know, after that they went through that little bit of a blip because it hit them. Because I think they feel that they're not that far off City. They're definitely not five unanswered goals apart from City. And so that was destabilising for them as well.
So often, Rob, rivalries are actually built on similarities. Liverpool-Manchester United, Liverpool-Everton, culturally very much built on the idea that we are very similar to you, and that's how this works. Liverpool-Chelsea, going back those 13 years ago to Mourinho and Benitez, was very much about similarities on the pitch, similarities of approach, similarities of the way in which we feel as though the best football is played. And that, I think this one is potentially very, very similar to that. As Mel said before, these two sides, they arguably do have a great deal in common in terms of their setup.
Yeah, is it the best two managers in the division? To an extent, one of the most expansive managers in terms of the quality of the football teams they put out. Stylistically, there's huge similarities. They both play with four attacking players at least wherever possible. And I agree with Mel. I can't help that if Manchester City are champions elect, Liverpool are second best team in the country elect. We've got a lot further to go to prove that. But I believe it. I think the Coutinho thing is, it maybe realigns things. It maybe it doesn't. We'll see how Liverpool bed in with Van Dijk as semi-compensation and maybe one or two others. But I hope this is the start of a period of English football history where it is these two very, very substantial attacking teams, because I also think they can have a major impact on European football.
I think that's really interesting that Rob says that, Paul, because the Chelsea thing, firstly, I think what's important is that Klopp and Guardiola, they seem very respectful to each other, whereas the Benitez and Mourinho turned horribly sour quite quickly.
Yeah.
But also, you feel as though they learn from each other, which you do think about Benitez and Mourinho. But the next part of this is, this almost feels like a rivalry both clubs could do with. City almost need a rivalry to put this, or whatever this is for them, in context, to give it a context, to give it an ebb and flow. United's too close, it's too unpleasant, it's too visceral. They need something else, they need there to be some shade to their light, if that's what it is, and it could well be us. But you also get the impression it might be one that we need as well at the minute, the idea that if these are going to be the dominant force in English football, we need to be the ones who are right there, right on them, and being able to understand and explain why.
I think that's absolutely right, and And I think as well, this, I've been saying for a while now to my mate who's a City fan, and I'm not usually prone to hyperbole, but I will be in this instance. I think this fixture, whilst Klopp and Guardiola are in charge, has got the potential to become a rivalry that surpasses all others that have gone before. Because even when you think of Guardiola teams in the past, when has he ever had a rival who's prepared to go toe-to-toe with him? Who's prepared to say, we'll match you and we'll come out, we'll see who comes out on top. That's what we'll do. Every time he's up against someone else, a Mourinho, a Conte, whoever, they've defeated him. He has been defeated, but not by an equal, not by someone saying to him, we can do what you can do and we can do it better. And I think that's what we're going to see time and time again over the years. And you're going to see them squaring off against each other. As Mel says about, we were saying off air as well, the Mane sending off massively changes that last fixture. And even if we were talking about their defence before, even if Salah had been in the form he's been in since that fixture that game, they'd have been 2 or 3 down very quickly. Their defence was in tatters in the opening phases of that game. And just because they won 5-0, everyone's forgotten about that. And then they went on this run.
One of the themes that have emerged since then, you know, is like the rebirth of Otamendi. And if you think about that day and Salah constantly giving him a nightmarish time without the finish, though, that's why I say, like, that fixture and that moment in the game, the sending off, has changed so much. And I'd give anything to go back and see how that match would have turned out, 11v11, with Guardiola himself admitting that it was going to be, you know, a completely different encounter. But I agree with Cope in the sense that it is such an intriguing fixture because you know what both sides want to do, and you know that both sides don't want to compromise either. They want to be the best at what they want to be the best at. And that 1-1 draw last season was probably the most riveting match I've ever watched in my life. And it sounds silly to say that for a draw and such a low-scoring draw, but I've never seen so many things not happen that could have potentially happened in a game. It was utterly, utterly wondrous to watch.
That was the game that Toure got basically carried off on, wasn't it? And wrapped in a foil blanket. And I remember being in the pub feeling like that. I remember thinking there's going to be people dying watching these matches in the future. It was exhausting to watch, and I think that's what we're in for.
I think that the game at the Etihad last year, Rob, it's one of the fast. I mean, I think the weather conditions play a part because it lashes down for the hour before kickoff in the first half an hour,
zipping
and then
the
ball's zipping all over the place. But it is the I remember the Rodgers game 14-15 when we would go to Chelsea, and that's one of the fastest games of football I ever saw in the League Cup. And in the years that have followed, there's 3 seasons that have followed that year, I've been watching these matches, some of the matches Liverpool play, get faster and faster and faster. And that game against Manchester City last season at the Etihad, the 1-1, is probably the fastest game of football I ever remember seeing in my life. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. I was lucky enough to be behind the goal that day, and I still haven't got over it. It was too fast for Adam Lallana. There was a crucial moment where Liverpool win that football match and make it look not the end-to-end game. Liverpool could have put that to bed. It's hard to imagine if Liverpool and City stay 11v11, that it's not going to be a festival of chances. And that's not to damn defences and say these are teams with great attacks and weak defences. I just think these are teams with amazing attacks who will find ways around each other. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a matter of how hard... They're each going to lay punches on each other. It's just how hard those punches are. Chances being taken is going to be the thing.
We'll come back to the chances being taken in a minute. The other thing that strikes me about both of them... I'll go to you first on this one, Paul. Both clubs, but also both managers in this. I've got something I was going to say before that I didn't get to, that Klopp, as a Liverpool manager, could simultaneously be the most intransigent and simultaneously most flexible manager we've had in a while. And it's really quite strange. A lot of the depictions around Julián and Benítez in particular were that they were stubborn men. Mm. And this was used as a stick to beat them with. Rather, I think at their best, they were stubborn men. They were men who had a way of going about their business and what they believed in. What you see, I think, from both Klopp and Guardiola is they're actually prepared to be more flexible with their players in terms of how they manage them off the pitch, for instance, letting Coutinho go recently, but also with what they get them to do on the pitch. But simultaneously, that they're given that flexibility as long as they adhere to the intransigent idea as to what we all do. And I think that's really interesting, that it isn't sort of a football that's played within a straitjacket. That's not the case, but it is played with an unbelievable amount of structure around it. And that's the case for both sides.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite arguments I end up having with people over the years. And I remember arguing about it, about Guardiola's Barcelona side, who, when people say to me, this is dead easy. Why doesn't everyone play football like this? It's dead easy. And I love using the example of there's a difference between something being simple and something being easy. It seems like those two things are the same, but they're not. The way these two men want to play football, the philosophy behind it is simple, but to carry it out and to execute it the way they both do is not easy. The work that goes behind, when I've watched some Barcelona matches in the past, and City are obviously getting to that level now with the way they play. I've watched it with people and they'll watch sort of 20 passes in the space of a few seconds in intricate little positions and refer to that as being easy. And it's almost want to sit with people and slow it down and talk through how a team can move in a way like it's one living organism that allows those passes to be facilitated. That's the bit that most people don't see about football, I think, is that the passing doesn't come without the movement. The movement doesn't come without the knowledge from each player on the pitch of where they're meant to be and how they're meant to do it. And that only comes from dedication and commitment and repeated drills over and over again that leads to it.
Yeah. You make a great point, because if you ask Klopp or any one of his coaching staff to distill their blueprint into one phrase, it would be simple and quick. And then they laugh because it is anything but simple. And it's supposed to be a quickness that you know, can't even comprehend. And if you speak to the players about the demands, I mean, I think they've all referenced it. Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, recently having to adjust from a more technical passing game to an aggressive what you have to do in possession, out of possession, a much more rigorous sort of, you know, style, both mentally and for his body. And so, yeah, it's my favorite fixture, but I'm also a little bit, what's the word? I'm worried about this game, I think, post Coutinho, because he has been quite a big part of Liverpool's victories in these encounters. He scored 5 goals against City, which is the most that he's managed against any side. And they found it hard to stop him because he plays in the pockets as much as, you know, like Kevin De Bruyne and their players want to play in the pockets and had the vision to pick a pass. And Liverpool's midfield without him as it stands at the moment is concerning. I know, you know, it's great to have Adam Lallana back from his injury. He's an important player. It's timely. He's great in small spaces, but he's never been the final third player that Coutinho was. He's never been that much of a threat. And he's got a great passing ability, but not to the extent that Coutinho did. And I think Oxlade-Chamberlain's been excellent over recent weeks, but his strengths again are individualistic. He's dynamic. He wants to break the lines and stuff. And that's to service those in front of him. Salah, Mane, he's capable of doing it, yes, but I don't think it's as much of a natural thing to him as it was to Coutinho. So the only thing that concerns me about this fixture is Liverpool's midfield and where the improvision and the vision and all those things are going to come from.
I don't fear Coutinho's absence for this game more than any other. In fact, I don't fear his absence at all. I just fear the lack of the option, really, because I think Liverpool have shown they can play without Coutinho this season. And they don't even drop down a slight percentile, when they've had Mane, Firmino and Salah. As long as you could pick three of what was the Fab Four, this Liverpool team can be devastating. I think we've seen it at all stages this season, especially on the counter-attack. And although I think Coutinho, I mean, he's obviously got that incredible goal-scoring record against City, I wouldn't say he's had the greatest. He has certainly played well in those games, but it's the goals that stand out. A couple of them screamers, and one, you know, such a sort of talismanic goal, the one against City in the 3-2. I wouldn't say he's been intrinsic to our performances. I mean, in that game, Sterling is the key player for the main part. Jordan Henderson has an incredible impact in the second half of that game. We didn't have in the early phase before Mane sending off at the Etihad earlier this season. Coutinho isn't available that day, is he? Am I right in saying? And I think if we get Salah and Mane on form and Firmino's in the groove, I'm hoping with our new superstar
again,
at the back.
Then you're talking about the attack then, and you said that your concern isn't particularly Coutinho, but the lack of an option. That's exactly what my point is. Who is now
not
the
on the
creative
pitch? I mean,
architect.
In selection. No, I don't know. I'm happy enough. I mean, look, you looked at us at West Ham or Arsenal without Coutinho. We didn't lack creativity one iota there. We have boys who just have to give it to the boys who are running. It doesn't require precision passing when the movement's that good. That's what I.
I'm not looking at you like you're mad because I think that we've shown that we can play perfectly well without Coutinho playing. We've shown it in big games this season. But then you begin to sort of go down the list. I'm mildly concerned that Lallana had a good first start back against Burnley, but that it was different against Everton, which is often the case after you've had a long layout. Yeah. Your first one back, the adrenaline's pumping. The nature of that game against Burnley probably helped, and then he can't quite go the well again against Everton.
He won't start.
You're saying that, but he's in the shake-up. The point I'm about to come to is, I think if you look at those games where we played really well this season without Coutinho, we've had Henderson, Wijnaldum and Chan all on the pitch, and they've all been doing a good job together.
And Oxlade-Chamberlain at times instead of one of them.
Well, Oxlade-Chamberlain, but I sort of, one of my things here, when you're talking about getting the ball to them relatively quickly, That's where I'm shifting the ball quite quickly. That's where I am. Actually, I'm mildly concerned about the lack of Henderson in this, in terms of someone who will just simply click a finger and it'll go faster for Liverpool, whether it goes to them or not. Paul, my worry isn't so much the idea that Coutinho isn't available, but it's that there's three or four players who either aren't available or you feel are just a bit off peak form, all of whom will be playing in the middle of the park. I don't think Wijnaldum's had a good month, as an example. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain still feels a bit like a toss of a coin as to which version of him you're going to get, even though I think he's done well at times. Lallana is out. Is on his way back. Henderson is out. It, to me, does seem like my concern is simply that in the middle of the park, and in that idea of shifting the ball from the middle third to the final third, I am mildly concerned we might be one good, one light.
I think I'm generally in agreement with that, but I think my biggest concern is if this was a month further on, or if Lallana had come back a month earlier, I wouldn't have any concerns really. I am a little bit concerned that this is. I was looking before when I was thinking about what side would you pick, and we've got a couple of players that I would ordinarily might throw into a game that I think will it just be too fast for them when we're talking about how quick this fixture could be. And Lallana, generally speaking, I would have no concerns about, but only on him not being back up to 100% yet. And we don't know what. He might have a great training week away and come back flying. So, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about that. I'm generally, again, though, I'm probably more with Rob on the fact, on the Coutinho point, that I think if this was any other type of game, I'd be more worried about Coutinho not being there. But I think because we can be certain that City come and play us, I'm more in line with sort of Rob's idea that, well, there will be plenty of movements up front and plenty of running going on. And even in my midfield would be Wijnaldum, Chan and Lallana. Each of them is capable of playing a pass over the top or feeding the ball through. That doesn't need to be a Coutinho-esque, amazingly spot-on pass. It can just be in the ballpark of where you need it. So just because of the nature of the game, I'm not that concerned about Coutinho missing.
Could we, you know, I think we're missing the idea of Coutinho being around in the ether more than I'm worried about him on the pitch. We've gone through a really intense run of fixtures from November through to December and into early January, where Klopp rotated and Coutinho very often didn't feature. I know he had a run near the very end before he left, where I think he plays four.
I'm not worried about Coutinho not featuring. I'm worried about the fact that Lallana's not 100%. We know he's not. That Wijnaldum's not been playing particularly well.
I think he's done okay in patches,
but I think there's been patches where he's been doing his disappearing act, and I'm worried that you see that. And again, I think Wijnaldum plays better when Henderson's on the pitch. We haven't got Henderson as an option in there. And then you're having a conversation around Oxlade-Chamberlain, where, as I say, I've got no problem with Oxlade-Chamberlain in centre midfield, but the one thing he's not is a passer of the ball. He's got lots of other skills and he's a decent passer, but he's not a creative passer of the ball. That's the point that me and Mel are making.
Do you know, I think Liverpool will play with Oxlade-Chamberlain ahead of Lallana in a kind of that sort of 4-4-2-ish type formation they played at West Ham. I think that's how they're...
So which of the front three is missing out?
Which none of the front three. Salah and Firmino will form a twin, and Mane and Oxlade-Chamberlain will be normally wider.
And so we'll have Lallana centre mid next to Emre Can.
No, Lallana won't play. Wijnaldum and Can will anchor.
So it's 4-2-2-2
is okay. How I think we'll break. Quite ostensibly narrow that can fan out and designed to draw City in and hit them on the break.
Mel, what do you think?
I take everyone's points on board, and I think Neil was the only one who got what I was saying. Is
oh really?
And Neil is also the most handsome in the room.
It isn't so much as not having Coutinho there, and no matter what anyone says, it is a thing not having him there, because this is a player that contributed 20 goals in 20 games this season. He does make a difference, especially in the final third. And he makes those ahead of him play better. But that's not the point. The point is, without him, the options that are left. And like Neil, I have concerns over many of them, especially against this City midfield, which is, you know, it's got balance. It's got everything you practically want in a midfield. In terms of selection, I can see Rob's point, and that's probably going to be it, although I think he'd be tempted to play Lallana instead of Oxlade-Chamberlain.
He wouldn't play the two, would he?
Can I just ask one question when you're talking about City's midfield? And I'll go and ask everyone in the room, if they both play their eight and a half out of ten game, who's better, Fernandinho or Emre Can? Anyone? Any takers?
Fernandinho.
You think Fernandinho?
I don't watch enough Fernandinho. I think Emre Can at his best is a very potent player.
Mel?
Yeah, I think Emre offers more.
I think it's really interesting because we talk a lot about Liverpool's midfield, and I've had conversations in the ground with people about Liverpool's midfield, and not bad tempered ones. But the thing I always end up saying is, well, who'd you want? Who would you have? And Fernandinho, I think, is a good player. I think he's a really good player. I think he could potentially be a great player, but I don't see night and day there. I don't see night and day between him and either of our lads.
It's the entire unit. It's the entire midfield unit.
And that's where I'm worried about the difference being Silva if he starts and De Bruyne being, because I think it's close between the front threes. It's really close between the front threes. You can toss a coin and say which one you prefer. I think it's really close between that. If it's Henderson or Chan and Fernandinho, I think that's really close. Where I worry a little bit is I do sort of worry that Silva and De Bruyne are the ones who are able to outdo Liverpool in the middle of the pass.
Well, this is where I think, going back to the Coutinho conversation, it could potentially be a moot point anyway. I think there was an argument that he wouldn't have played in midfield anyway in this fixture.
I think he would have played left, but he'd have dropped and shown.
Yeah,
and
being deep anyway.
Because I think, despite what we were saying before, I think Klopp would want more lads in midfield who are able to nullify to a certain degree the threat of Silva and De Bruyne, which is a ridiculous threat. I often reference the Silva performance at Anfield in the 13-14 season. Mm. And every time I see him, he's still just exactly the same as that. And now alongside him, he's got this other lad who somehow has become better than him, which is just incredible. So my view is he'll go a little bit more solid in the middle of the pitch. So he'll have, I can't believe anyone thinks Lallana won't play. Joe is
really
his blue-eyed boy.
I think he'd even go if you only get an hour out of him.
I think the big player for Liverpool, I actually think, is Sadio Mane. Mane's going to play off the left. He's going to be asked to play, come a little bit deep, but he's going to be asked to come and get involved. He's going to be asked to be a bit more Phil Coutinho. We saw it at times this season when Coutinho didn't play. And I actually think that the key player in the game, almost full stop, for me, is going to be Sadio Mane. If Sadio Mane really brings a performance as an attacking midfielder who joins the front three and makes the front three up, and then the other two are doing front two things, then I think that we've got every chance of getting a really positive result. I'm going to ask you quickly for your predictions, Mel, first.
2-1 to Liverpool.
2-1 to Liverpool. Almost as came as a shock to you, Mel. Phil. No, not Phil. Paul.
Everyone's head's gone. Let's go bigger. 4-1 Liverpool.
4-1 Liverpool.
Mine was a bit of disbelief.
I always call a Liverpool win, but I'm going to call this 1-1.
1-1. All right. I am 4-2 Liverpool, and I'm 4-2 Liverpool on all platforms at all times. I'm going huge, though. It might be a toss of a coin, and if I'm saying the second most likely outcome is 4-2 City. I think whoever makes it 2-1 wins the game. Thank you very much to Paul, to Rob, and to Mel, and to John for coming in on part two. It's been a fantastic Anfield wrap. Up the Reds. I'm so looking forward to Sunday. It's going to be immense. Sports Social Podcast Network.